And you are in tune to 88.1 FM KPFZ Lake County Community Radio. Welcome to Guerrilla Radio.
Must be some kind of way out of here, said a joker to the thief. There's too much confusion, I can't get no relief. Businessman there, drink my wine.
And today on Guerrilla Radio, you are going to hear a pre-recorded interview with Steel Smith. Steel Smith is the central figure in what could be the most significant federal marijuana case in U.S. history, the first allowing a medical defense based on state law. A medical marijuana patient and his wife faced 10 years in federal prison in a fight to uphold the 10th Amendment of the United States Constitution, states' rights allowing safe, legal access to medical marijuana. Today we hear the story of a patient diagnosed with a rare disease, embroiled in a fight for his life and the rights of medical marijuana patients nationwide. Steele's trial is scheduled for March 22, 2011 at the Ronald Reagan Federal Courthouse, 411 West 4th Street, Santa Ana, California. Please help support this case by showing up for a pre-trial rally at the courthouse starting at 7:30 a.m. and please bring signs. His website is steelscase.org. That's steelscase.org. And the next thing that you will hear is an interview with Steel Smith, recorded live on January 25th, 2011. Thank you for tuning in and enjoy. And so I guess we can start out by maybe you can tell me a little bit about yourself and you know, how you first got involved with cannabis, with the whole cannabis scene.
Well, I got started with the cannabis scene as a patient. I'm an Orange County native who owned a marketing company for 14 years prior to being diagnosed with a rare disease, Zollinger-Ellison, in 2002. And in the process, I got really sick and got put on morphine and got addicted to it and had to get myself off of it and get cleaned up. And in the course and scope of doing that, I found medical marijuana. In Orange County back then, there were no shops or doctors, so I went to L.A. and visited a doctor in a dispensary, and I kind of realized after visiting those that I could do this myself. And so we set up a California Compassionate Patient, California Compassionate Caregivers as our collective in Orange County.
Nice, nice. And then, and so after this, you had some problems with the local county government, correct?
Yeah, we when we first set up our collective, we were in the city of Placentia, and through a small raid there on 18 mother plants that were seen in my garage one day through mistake, the police came to our place and cut the plants down and were wondering why we had plants, and I told the officers that I was a caregiver and showed them my legal paperwork, and back then they hadn't seen any paperwork from a caregiver before. They didn't know what a collective looked like. So this was at about 7 p.m. This went till about 1 a.m. where they called the district attorney, got him out of bed, and said, we're here at this address looking at this this person's collective that he's claiming, and we don't know, you know, if this is valid or not. So the district attorney said, well, does he have a business license? Does he have a corporation? Does he have a bank account? And he said, yeah, he's got all that. And district attorney said, well, okay, just take it all and leave. So they did. By 1 o'clock in the morning, they took all my paper, my medicine, my plants, and left, and left me a business card and said, you can follow up with us. So I did for the next several months, and realized that they were just blowing us off. They weren't going to return any of my records or product. And so I got a civil attorney, and we filed a lawsuit against the city of Placentia for violation of our civil rights. And that case was going alongside the Felix Kaw case in Garden Grove, which everybody knows Felix Kaw beat the city of Garden Grove. And the judge in our case was in our favor. We were beating the city of Placentia. And Placentia is a very small bedroom community in Orange County that probably couldn't sustain an award of that magnitude. So the city attorney, in his wisdom, called the DEA and elevated our case to a federal matter. The good news on the civil cases is that it was dismissed such that we can go back to court and reenact the case when our federal case is over with. If our damages back then were minimal, our damages now, 4 years later, are massive. So
so tell me about what happened when the feds came in.
Well, when we had that little raid in Placentia, my wife and I moved within a 2 months afterwards. While we were suing the city, we just moved out of the city to Fullerton. While in Fullerton, we actually had some police come into the Fullerton location and look over our grow, and the captain of the squad, it was the drug squad in the city of Fullerton's police department, said that she'd seen many grows in her city and that this was the cleanest grow she'd ever seen. She, too, gave me her business card and said, if you ever have any troubles, Mr. Smith, please give me a call. Well, it was about a month after that the DEA broke down our door. It was November 1st of 2007 that the DEA broke down our door on a raid. And we know that the DEA raid came from the Placentia incident, not the Fullerton incident.
Yeah.
So from there, we were indicted for cultivation and conspiracy to cultivate over 1,000 plants.
And so your trial, your case is going to trial, but it keeps being postponed. Why do you think this is so?
Well, I believe it's being postponed because the federal cases prior to us all had multiple counts. They all had multiple charges. They all had something other than what they were doing for their primary business of being a caregiver. They had charges of money laundering, tax evasion, other drugs, guns, selling to minors. These issues kind of dirtied those cases. And while the cases may have been good and may have been legitimate, and they were, I'm sure, all good people, the case itself was dirty because when the government can get in front of a jury and go on about any drugs or guns or anything that was in possession, it kind of kills their primary argument of, we were just a caregiver. Well, that's what's unique in our case, is we have none of that. Our case is only a single count indictment for cultivation. I don't come from the pot culture or the pot world. I come from a marketing company for 14 years, so I have a professional background. I don't think that this is a clean case for the government to put in front of a jury because they can't make us dirty. We are clean. And I think this is the first federal case to come along where the government truly feels that they have are going to have difficulty getting 12 jurors to convict us when there is no other evidence of anything that we did wrong. We were purely acting under our state's rights under Prop 215.
And how? So, oh, yeah. Go ahead.
No, it's just to say that's why I think it's been put off so long. They don't want to dismiss it because they've spent so much money on this case to date, and they don't want to try it because I think they don't think that it's a home run. I think that it's going to be a battle. And I think this is why my wife and I are willing to hold out, is because we believe that we're going to get one juror who's going to have a sense of what's right and say, no, you know, this is not right. These people were acting properly under California state law and under the 10th Amendment of the federal constitution. That's their right. And that's what this is about. This is about the bigger issue of the 10th Amendment and states' rights for individuals to collectively cultivate under California state law. Furthermore, because this is a 10th Amendment issue of our right to operate under state law and not have federal law supersede, there's 15 other states that now have medical marijuana laws, and they're all watching our case. If we win and get new law that affirms the 10th Amendment and gives 15 other states affirmation of that 10th Amendment, allowing their patients and caregivers to collectively organize in those states.
So your motion that was accepted by the court, correct me if I'm wrong, but that was basically like a Fifth Amendment argument. Like your right to procedural due process, to talk about why you did what you did. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, Conrad, I am not too adept on specifically the law with regard to the Fifth Amendment motion on the due process. My understanding is that claim of due process is kind of a general motion that's filed by many attorneys in many situations. The really important motion, I've learned recently, isn't actually posted on our website right now, and I'll make sure in the next week or two that I do get that posted. We have four motions that our attorneys have filed. Two of them are 10th Amendment motions, and one of them is the Fifth Amendment right to due process, and the fourth one challenges the search warrant.
And so that's a fourth Amendment argument.
I believe so. Yes, sir.
And so what motions were accepted and which were ignored? I mean, were there any that were ignored?
That's a great question, Conrad. They've all been ignored. The first two were filed over a year ago. And my understanding is that when the government files a motion, we as defendants have 30 days to respond. I would think that what's good for the goose is good for the gander. The fact that we've filed motions over a year ago and the government still hasn't responded, I find interesting. It seems to me that they don't want to answer because they don't want to have this matter adjudicated. Right now, and in the past, our government's been using the Commerce Clause to kind of steamroll the 10th Amendment. And that's kind of been happening without the citizens paying attention. And I think that this case is bringing attention to that process, and I don't think they want that attention.
And so what did the judge say? Like, what was he accepting when certain testimony is being allotted for the case? What did the judge say? What did the judge accept? I mean, what is his understanding of what is going to be introduced in the testimony?
Well, here's how this went down, Conrad. When the DEA brought us in before the judge, they brought in a motley group of four people who'd had a rough 48 hours before that. My wife and I were pulled out of our beds and stuck into a prison cell in our bathrobes. We were then basically taken into courtroom in front of our bathrobes. There were two people with us. One was Alex Valentine, who's a 21-year-old kid with elephant man syndrome. He'd had 30 surgeries by his 21st birthday. The fourth guy was Dennis Lalonde, who was a friend of a mutual friend, who was homeless at the time. And because we were headed into winter, it was raining outside, and he was sleeping under a freeway overpass. So we just gave him a home. When the judge realized that these four people were a husband and wife, one of whom is very sick, who has a good family and a good professional background and a clean record, and the other two are basically a young patient kid and a homeless man, these aren't drug dealers. These are not a cartel. These are not gangsters. These are not mobsters. This judge saw this. And our attorney had the wisdom on that moment to say, Your Honor, they're not being charged with tax evasion, money laundering, sales, distribution, weapons, other drugs. This is simply a cultivation case. There is no proof that any medicine they cultivated was ever diverted, ever saw the streets, or ever saw a minor. They followed the rules as best as we can see, and they deserve the right to testify in front of the jury about what they're doing. The government's prosecution is going to be that it is federally illegal to cultivate marijuana. There's no such thing as medical marijuana in the federal verbiage. So they're going to say, we were cultivating. It's federally illegal to cultivate. Period. That's it. We would go down on that. And this judge saw that, no, this is California state. They're operating duly under the California laws. It's not fair for the heavy hand of the feds to override that. So our judge, in his wisdom, saw this situation kind of mushrooming, and he had the wisdom to say, no, I'm going to allow the Smiths to testify as to the belief that what they were doing was right under California state law. This judge believes that this jury should hear this.
And so, what? Isn't that what the motion that's on your website about the Fifth Amendment? Isn't that basically? Wasn't that accepted then? I mean, if you're being allowed to have testimony, like, is the testimony about the legality of the Compassionate Use Act? Like, as far as your understanding of it?
Well, see, that's the interesting point about this, Conrad, is that the government hasn't actually argued this yet. This is just kind of been ruled on by the... It's not kind of. It was ruled on by the judge in open court, and it's on the record. It's not law until the case is actually over with. Right now, it's just... It's an open ruling on an open record.
I see.
And it hasn't been challenged. Now, that may turn out to be a tactic of the government's down the road to actually challenge that. But our judge, Cormac J. Carney, just got off the, or finished up the Broadcom case. And he made some really out-of-the-box rulings in the Broadcom case. So this judge has already told the government, this is how I feel about these issues. This is what I'm going to do. So I think the government's just kind of accepting that and not challenging our right to testify under a medical defense.
Now, you brought up the Broadcom case.
Well, Broadcom was it's a securities case from Broadcom Technologies. It was a year or two ago.
And what was that about?
It's a securities case.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, what was the significance of the ruling, though?
You know, I honestly can't speak to that one at all, other than I know that his rulings were considered very forward, very conservative, and against the government.
Yeah.
They were pro private, private business.
I see. And so, So I'm just trying to clarify here. So the judge, whatever the judge ruled, that's on a transcript on the court record, but it's not necessarily on like a ruling that he officially put out that you can read. Like,
well, his decision is a ruling.
Yeah,
it's a ruling, but it's a verbal ruling that is on the transcript.
I see.
So the fact that he verbally ruled on the transcript that he's going to allow us to present a medical defense
during trial is essentially operating law for purposes of this case.
Nice. And so the government has not appealed that in any way yet.
Correct.
Yes. So do you think they might appeal it in the future?
That's a good question, Conrad. Who knows?
Yeah.
That's why we're all just kind of watching.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you mentioned a while back the Felix Carr case. Now, can you just kind of explain like the significance of that? Like, because there's a lot of people that I don't even think fully even understand California law, and that, you know, 215 is law, and that you have the right to possess cannabis as a patient. And my understanding was that case. Can you explain that a little bit?
Absolutely. I'm fairly familiar with this case. Felix Ca was a 19-year-old young man, a young Vietnamese man in Garden Grove. He was pulled over on a traffic stop for a California stop on a light. Officer pulled him over, and in the process of issuing him a traffic ticket, said that he smelled marijuana in the car. He asked Felix if there was any marijuana, and he said, yes, I'm a patient. I have my recommendation. I have under an ounce, and I have a pipe. The police officer, after viewing his recommendation, and we don't know if the cop believed the recommendation was valid at the time, but the court record states that the recommendation was found to be valid. So what we know after fact is that the cop should have accepted the recommendation as valid, but he did not. And he seized the ounce of medication and the pipe, and Felix Carr got a civil attorney and sued the city of Garden Grove for violation of his civil rights and return of his medicine and his pipe. He won that case. He was given $400,000 for the violation of his civil rights. He also won $200,000 as punitive damages for attorney's fees. Now, the $200,000 judgment is the important part, because typically when people win civil cases, they'll get an award, but very rarely do they win punitives. Punitives are reserved by judges for when the case is egregious or there are extenuating circumstances. And this particular traffic officer really trampled on Mr. Ca's right. So the civil judge sent a message to the Garden Grove Police Department: do not violate patients' rights again in this city. If you do, and they sue, we're going to slap you hard with civil damages as well as punitives. So every city attorney in the county heard that, including my city attorney and judge in the city of Placentia in my case. And that's why our city attorney got scared and sought another way out. Now, where he made his mistake and where he was foolish was when he elevated it to the feds, he never played that tape forward and said, well, what happens if Mr. Smith doesn't get indicted or doesn't get found guilty? What if Mr. Smith wins? If Mr. Smith wins, he may get to go back to this Placentia court case, which he needed to realize that this judge could potentially dismiss without prejudice. So that's kind of what's happening, is it's looking like we may win this. And if I do win the federal case, then I get to go back to my civil case, in which the damages originally were 4 hours of detention in my house by 10 police officers, seizure of 18 plants, 4 pounds of finished product, less than an ounce of concentrate, and $1,100 in cash. Now that they elevated this to the federal level, I was incarcerated for 10 months. My wife was incarcerated for 2 months. I was on a bracelet for another year. We lost 2 houses, a car, 2 dogs, and all of our personal property, furniture, tax records, personal photos, and my wife's mother. So if the value then, we were in our civil case against Placentia, we were asking for $5 million. And that's a high number, but it could have been settled by the judge at $1 million, $500,000, $100,000. And that would have sent the message to the city of Placentia not to violate patients' rights. But now that they've elevated it to the federal level, if we win, I don't think you can put a number on it. I mean, you know, to go from 5 hours to 4 years, the number's the stars. So this is really massive. You know, this is something that the city of Placentia are very nervous about. The city attorney really screwed up by doing this. The government's kind of caught into a situation where the DEA didn't stumble on us through an investigation. They didn't stumble on our grow. They didn't find us because of a police investigation or because we screwed up or diverted medicine or anything like that. They stumbled on us because they got a phone call from the city attorney in Placentia who was crying about the fact that his officers violated our rights, and now we're suing him, and now we're winning. And because he's facing losing, he doesn't want to lose. So he says, here, Mr. Fed, please indict these guys and take care of this problem for us. That's what happened.
What was the official evidence that, in their opinion, justified the search and raid of your home?
It was the garage being left open. You see, in Placentia, what happened is, it was a Friday night, about 5, 6 p.m., and I had a buddy over. And I wasn't paying attention. I made a mistake. And I went upstairs, and I was up there too long. It got dark. And our garage is a rolling garage door that rolls up and opens on an alley. So at this time, it's getting dark. The timer in the garage turned the lights on as the cop's rolling down the alley doing what he says is unrelated surveillance. So as he's rolling down the alley, he sees the light pop on in the garage. And, you know, metal halides have a certain spectrum. So out of curiosity, he poked his head in the garage and he saw about 18 plants in there. He got on the radio to his fellow officers and brought them all down. I'm upstairs, and a cop bangs on my door in plain clothes. And he says, is that your Grand Cherokee parked in the alley? I said, yeah. He says, I clipped your mirror. Can you come down? I want to exchange insurance information with you. I said, sure. I go down the stairs, and there's two uniformed officers at the bottom of the stairs, and they grab me and hook me up. And they say, do you know why you're here? They say, do you know why we're here? And I said, well, yeah, you're probably here because of the 18 plants in the garage. And they said, yeah, well, what's up? And I said, well, I'm a caregiver. This is part of a collective. It's duly organized. And whatever you need to know, I'll help you. So they all came upstairs, and that was about 7 p.m. They showed it up at our place, and they investigated my apartment, tore it apart, looked at all my paper, looked at all my records, went through my phones. And by 1 in the morning, they had no clue what to do. So they called the district attorney, or the prosecutor, and said, what do we do? This is what we found. The prosecutor asked them a bunch of questions. They answered them. And in the end, the prosecutor just said, fine, cut the plants down, take the finished product, take the concentrate, take the cash, take the patient records, and leave. And they did. And they left me a business card, and for about 2 months afterwards, I followed up with them saying, may I please have my medicine back? May I please have my concentrate, my cash, my records? And by the way, did you cut my plants? Are they dead? What I was actually saying then was, this is kind of funny, I said, please make sure you water my plants. Please make sure you hang the light, you know, 10 inches over the top. And, you know, they just, you know, cut them without even asking. In fact, they cut him before they even called the DA. So they screwed up. You know, they came in like bulls in a china closet, and they thought that they stumbled on a small grow, and what they stumbled on was a guy who was trying to comply with the laws as clear as they were at that time. Remember, this is back in late of 05. The laws were still somewhat nefarious and somewhat confusing and ambiguous. So I did the best I could, like any other caregiver at that time, to be compliant. And I think that I really dotted my I's and crossed my T's such that the district attorney at that time was not able to make a case. So when I sued them civilly, they kind of said, oh, shit, we kind of screwed up. And there's even precedent case going at the same time in Garden Grove. They're watching Garden Grove lose, and they're kind of going, damn, our situation's worse than Garden Grove. We could really lose bad. And Garden Grove's a big city. Garden Grove's got some money. They can afford a $400,000 or $600,000 judgment. Placentia's a bedroom community. It's tiny. And, you know, we're asking for $5 million. Even if I got a $500,000, that would hurt the city of Placentia. So that city attorney was doing what he could in doing his job for the city of Placentia in seeking resolution. And I'm sure he thought that resolution was, let's call the feds, let's call the DEA, tell them about these people, let them come and indict them, and that'll take the problem off our hands. Well, the DEA didn't look into us. They didn't need to investigate us. They already had an investigation handed to them from the city of police from Placentia. So they didn't need to look into the fact as to whether or not we were duly organized. They didn't care. The issue for them was, are we cultivating or aren't we? And yeah, the DEA come in and cut down over 3,000 plants. And when only one charge was what was issued by the grand jury, when one charge is now, you know, facing the government's facing losing that one charge and we're facing winning, that sends this matter back to Placentia, which puts it all back in the original court, which is 18 plants, 4 pounds, like I said. And, you know, the city of Placentia should have just dealt with it then. They should have just said, hey, we're sorry. Here's your bud back. Here's your cash. Here's a little money for you for violating your rights for those 5 hours. We're sorry. And move forward. That would have been the good resolution. But they didn't. It kicked off a series of events that now is at the federal level, is now a case that the rest of the nation is watching. And when I say the rest of the nation, I'm talking about the 15 other states that also have medical marijuana laws that are also have citizens who are operating under the 10th Amendment to operate freely under their state laws without reprisal from the federal government. So a little tiny nothing raid out of Fullerton is now blown up to something where Eric Holder is concerned for new law that 15 other states could use to assert the 10th Amendment.
And so they have just ignored all, you said, 4 specific motions of dealing with the 5th, 4th, and 10th Amendments. They've just not responded to it?
Outright ignored.
Yeah. Isn't there, like, what are your thoughts on, isn't that a violation of, like, due process in itself? You know, like, don't they have to respond if you put forth, you know, some logic and reason and law?
You know, that's true. I believe that there is some due process rules with regard to that. However, our lawyers feel that tactically it's in our best interest to not press that issue and to simply let this ride as a stalemate and let all the other political issues shake out.
Yeah. And so, like, well, do you have any idea of, like, what you're going to say, you know, if you went up to in front of the jury right now, like, what kind of, do you have an idea about the things that you're going to try to bring out?
I can answer that this way. I'm going to take a month on the jury stand if I have to, because there's so much background and history and tangential information that requires substantive explanation that I'm going to take all the time I need to make sure that the jury understands every bit of detail. And so I can't even begin to lick that tip of that iceberg with you here on the phone.
Yeah, I understand.
Just know that it's so voluminous, I'll take a month if I need to.
Yeah, Right on. And so, when is your trial scheduled for?
Currently, it's March 22nd. That's our 14th postponement.
14th postponement. Wow. You know, and is there any, you know, other? Because I know if you actually went to law school for 2 years. I think you have a background in law. You know, is there anything that you'd like to say to like the people who are listening, as far as like educating them about the law? Like, what do you think they should know about California's law, and what do you think is the real kind of significance of your case?
I appreciate that question. Do you want me to answer that from a patient standpoint or from a caregiver standpoint?
Oh, both, if you could.
Sure. From a patient standpoint, they need to know that this case directly affects every individual. They need to tell their friends. They need to show up to local activist groups and attend meetings and discuss the case. They need to watch the website, and when rallies occur, they need to show up. It's that simple. They just got to be aware of what's going on and get out of bed on rally day and go stand on a cold street corner in front of a government building at 8 a.m. That's the most painful part of doing our job as patients and activists. Is activists like to show up to meetings in the evening and smoke pot after the meeting in the parking lot, but activists don't like to get up in the morning and get out of bed and drive to a cold street front in front of a government building to fight for their rights. So that's what I want activists to wrap their head around, is to stop being evening activists and start being morning activists. That's what I'd say to the patient world. To the caregiver collective owners, dot your I's and cross your T's. Follow the rules. I don't think that you can slip through, because if the federal government doesn't get you on a criminal charge, the IRS will get you on a tax evasion charge. There's no way around that. So if you can't play the game on the battlefield the way it is, don't fight. It's because it is a fight. You have to be prepared to... This isn't like starting a real estate firm. People think this is easy, but it's actually twice as hard as what most people realize. And so for anybody thinking about getting in the business, I'd dot your I's and cross your T's.
Yes. And I think we need to stress here that this is actually the first time in U.S. history that a case like this is being brought forth. And this is the only time that a federal judge is allowing this kind of testimony to be admitted in court. And so,
absolutely. This is wholly unique. It's the first time in U.S. history. And for that reason alone, I think activists should start deciding to show up to rallies, because that's what we need. If patients show up to rallies and there's a crowd in front of courthouses, when jurors drive to the courthouse in the morning to walk upstairs to be in the jury, they have to walk through a gauntlet of people in front of the courthouse with signs chanting free medical marijuana, states' rights issue, medical marijuana is medicine. And that is an education process for those jurors when they pass through that crowd of people. That's why they need to be there. If those jurors walk upstairs and no one's out front, the jurors don't think anyone cares. They know that this is a case just like any other case, and they convict. If we want new law, if we want things to change, if we want the 10th Amendment to be affirmed, you'll get out of bed in the morning and you'll show up as an activist to the rally. And that's what I need people to understand. I know that sounds hard, but I see too much out there evening activists speaking for morning activists.
Yes, I agree.
We need their help. We need everybody's help. We need to crowd the streets in front of the courthouse. We need helicopters overhead with the news shining the camera down on the crowd, showing the people in the state, look at all these people showing up in the morning for this case. Look how important this is to the people. That's how we get news. Quiet cases don't get news. cases with crowds in front of the courthouses get news.
And so what is your understanding about jury nullification and the law that surrounds that?
Well, jury nullification is a very viable course of potentially winning this case. It's not one that I'm hanging my hat on. It's one that we're educating people to, and it's definitely a mechanism. It's one that's viable. This jury could decide to nullify this verdict out of their own conscience, and that's viable. That's, again, another reason why we need people to show up for the rally, is to educate people as to jury nullification. Signs in the crowd talking about jury nullification would be helpful. Conrad, there's one other thing that I want people to remember, is that right now, my wife and I have our third offer on the table from the government, and it's time served. The first offer was 5 years. The second offer was probation. This current offer is time served. Any day during the week, my wife and I can call our attorney and say, I give up. But every day, we do this, and we continue to fight this fight. And we'd appreciate it if the people in our community would show up to rallies. We're only asking for one morning of their time. And every day, my wife and I do not pick up the phone and call our attorney and say we give up. Every day, we continue to fight the fight for everyone. So as a show of thank you, we're just asking people to show up on the morning of the rally.
And you, all four of you, are facing 10 years in federal prison, correct?
Yes, and that 10 years will kill two of the four of us. Alex, the young man with Elephant Man Syndrome, his form of Elephant Man Syndrome is an even rarer form that occurs only on his skull. So when he has surgery, they peel his face down and they chisel bone spurs off of his skull. When he gets out of surgery, imagine the pain he's in, and he does not take opiates. He says, give me medical marijuana. The prison guards will not give him medical marijuana. They probably won't even give him his surgery until it's too late. So he'll die in prison over 10 years. Me, I have a rare disease. They denied me my medicine for the 10 months in there. That's why the judge demanded my release after 10 months. Because my attorney was asking for the judge to compel the jailers to give me my medicine. So for that reason, they'll deny me my meds again over the 10 years, and I too will die in prison. So this is a death sentence for me. And I've got to do this knowing that my wife, when she gets out of prison after 10 years, she won't have a husband. So this is serious. This isn't like, we're facing a year, and if we lost, we could go do a year, and when we get out, it's over with, and we go about our life. No, I'm dead. My wife has nothing. Who does that? So, again, I'd like for people to know that that's what we face. That's what we fight. And we do this every day. Not one day in the past have we said, I can't handle it. I can't handle the pressure. I give up. So when the morning comes that people have to get out of bed to go to a rally, please just do it. I want to see every patient with a rack at the rally, because that's how they give back to those before even me who are in prison now, who are doing time fighting for the laws that I'm relying on. Remember, the issues in my case are riding on a bunch of laws before me. Those people are all dead or in prison. They deserve to be out. So I'm doing it, my wife is doing it for them. We need the patients now to do it for us. It's that simple.
Yes. And can you give out the place, the date, the time? You need people to show up. Any other contact information you'd like to get out there to people?
Yes, sir. 7:30 a.m., March 22nd, Ronald Reagan Federal Building, 4th Street, Santa Ana, California.
Right on.
My website is www.steelscase.org. That's STEELESCASE.org. It's a beautiful website, lots of good information, lots of media, lots of news and law. Please visit that, and right on the front page for ease of use is our calendar. On the top line is the current rally date. If you'd please just bookmark that site, visit it, say, monthly. That's all we can, the least we can ask. Just visit it monthly and check the date of the rally. When you see that date, please tell your friends, and please discuss it at any community activist groups meetings that you show up to.
And, you know, I just want to thank you so much for doing what you're doing, because you're fighting for everyone here. You're creating a blueprint of law here that other patients can work on and to learn from. And so I really enjoyed reading the motion that you did post on there. I found it was really educating, and I just compel other people to go to your site and to look up all the information there and to support you. And, you know, we're closing up here. You know, is there anything you'd like to say in closing?
Yeah, that, you know, may God bless every patient, and may God please bless this case. And for everybody to just remember that we're doing this for the cause. I don't want to call myself a martyr. People get called martyrs after they're dead. But this is what martyrs do. We're not complaining about our situation. We're simply fighting the good fight. And thank you.
And thank you so much. Really, thank you. And we just heard an interview with Steel Smith, defendant in Smith versus United States, the first federal marijuana case to allow a medical defense based on state law. And if you would like to learn more about this case and how to support it, then please visit www.steelscase.org. Again, that's STEELESCASE.org. And you are listening to KPFZ Lake County Community Radio 88.1 FM. And this has been Gorilla Radio. Thank you for tuning in. And see you next week.